Meenakshi has over 10 years of experience in trauma and crisis stabilization. She is the author of Decolonizing Nonviolent Communication and is a family constellation therapist working to help clients release intergenerational baggage and discover or rediscover a sense of purpose, sovereignty, and motivation for doing good work in the world. I am delighted to welcome her to Sober Sex.
Creativity, authenticity, body autonomy, mental health, sexuality, gender identity, recovery, got a spiritual growth. Sober Sex, all of this and more. Sober Sex, you'll never get bored. Sober Sex, all of this and more. Sober Sex, we're never ever bored. Creativity, authenticity, body autonomy, mental health, sexuality, gender identity, recovery, got a spiritual growth. Sober Sex, you'll never get bored. Sober Sex, all of this and more. Sober Sex, you'll never get bored. Sober Sex, all of this and more.
Hello and welcome. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm sweaty. Damn. But very, very happy and excited to talk to you.
Good. I'm excited to be here.
And you're in Los Angeles?
No, I'm in Oakland.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. I imagined West Coast and I was like immediately thought LA. So apologies for that. Awesome. And are you based there or like how long have you been there and what's it like?
All good questions. The Los Angeles question brought up so much. Me and LA have like a 20-year on again, off again, define the relationship.
It's tough, man.
It's real hard sometimes. And we recently took the break, made the space. And so I am in Oakland, have been here, I think since January or something like that.
Yeah, I was in Los Angeles for like 7 years.
Oh.
And now when I go back, I feel entirely manic.
Wow.
I mean, why the on again, off again? Is it just a lot?
I don't know that I have a reason such as that. I think it's just life.
Yeah. That's a good reason. Yeah. And before we get any further, what are your pronouns?
She, her.
And what is your experience of gender today? And that can either be like as a global awakening or like as a personal relationship?
I think I'm feeling pretty femmy today. I put on some pants that I like and mascara and like a little bit of chapstick lip gloss. And that was kind of nice to sit in and be with. And generally I think of gender as like oatmeal. it's just kind of there. We make of it what we make of it.
It exists, I guess. Like I choose to partake. I mean, I do. I'm a fan of oatmeal, but I feel you, and I like the fact that you're like, it exists. Maybe it's in my life, maybe not. That's cool. And so, I mean, the reason I wanted you to be on the show because I think that, you know, in our initial exchange, you were kind of like, I don't know. I mean, what's that about? But I feel like a lot of the work that you do, you know, in terms of like ancestral constellation work and in terms of like decolonize, that's like the you just took the largest container of water or liquid I've ever seen to take a gentle sip out of while I was asking this question. Sorry, I'm easily distracted. It was amazing. Like larger than your torso.
For listeners, it is like a light peach. It's a very beautiful light peach. It's a cylindrical in shape, and it is a half gallon, and it's lovely.
Fantastic. I have container envy. Especially because you don't have to like, apparently there's a straw inside the device because you didn't have to like lift it above your head, like an ancient vessel. Anyway, so I was basically saying before I so rudely interrupted myself that, you know, you would kind of question why I wanted you to be on a podcast on sober sex, because your work isn't specifically sexual in nature. And I don't believe you're in recovery on the sobriety tip, although I could be wrong. We could get into that. I've been wrong in the past, I guess. And so I feel like, however, that a lot of the subjects that your work touches on, so like decolonizing nonviolent communication and ancestral constellation stuff, and whatever you have in store to discuss, because I know you do kind of a lot of workshops and kind of facilitating conversations about things that are definitely aligned with the values of the show, and I think things that a lot of people within recovery or sober curious would be super interested in. So I wonder kind of like what is your path? Like, how did you get into these modalities of work?
I think the honest answer is A, by accident, and B, through wanting to win fights with my mom. So
amazing. The best reason.
Nonviolent communication came into my life in 2002. I'm Sri Lankan Tamil. At the time, there was a war for liberation. There was a ceasefire at that time, and I was home from college. And my amma was like, there's somebody who's doing a fundraiser to go back home and teach NVC, which is the acronym for nonviolent communication. And we were like, we don't know what that thing is, but we got to find out who that woman is. So we went to that fundraiser. Changed both of our lives, was really, really wonderful. And that woman is Jayanthi Siva, who I call Jayanthi Akka, which means big sister. She's still very much in my life. And so we did the fundraiser, went to the fundraiser, learned a little bit about nonviolent communication. We're like, whoa, these are like relevant tools for changing how we communicate with each other. Kind of like dropped from my radar. My amma, my mother, on the other hand, really started actively attending local practice groups. And I remember being on a conversation with her, like we had gotten into an argument on the phone, as children do with their parents. And I was so irritated at the end, and she seemed so chill. She was like, she could not have gotten off that phone call more relaxed. And I was like, no, like, absolutely.
Using I statements. You're just
like, how? Whatever she's doing, I'm going to do it more because I want to win this. So I started investing more heavily in my study of nonviolent communication, and also had like the great privilege and great honor, both my amma and I did, of being able to work with Jayanthi Akka back in Sri Lanka. So having some context for communication skills. And I loved it. And I also, through the work with Jayanthi Akka back home, saw a lot of the flaws and kind of like these places where these tools of communication, unless they were appropriately tailored for the community and the environment that they were in, they just like reinforced like colonial behavior, supremacist minds. It just didn't work. And so over many years, I think largely working in like nonprofit spaces with survivors and doing a lot of direct services trauma work, developed sort of like my own set of tools or the way I've tailored them to be more flexible and fluid. So that's how what I call DNVC really shaped itself in my life, decolonizing nonviolent communication. And then
I had a lot of like, I mean, I'm just going to pause you there because like initially all the questions were kind of like major statement and then kind of like a major topic, smaller topic, and then later asking questions. But I feel like it might flow a little bit more naturally if we kind of pause there and discuss like DNVC. Because I do feel like, I mean, as a fan of nonviolent communication, I mean, and also, I mean, so the way I got introduced to that work was that I had a boyfriend when I first moved to France. So around 10 years ago, who was like, you have to read this book or we can't talk. That's harsh. Which I'm like, I'm not sure how this is how nonviolent communication works, but okay. And I mean, I found it really helpful because, you know, I mean, there's obviously like a beautiful tool set there, but it definitely can be slightly patronizing with the like when you I like it can be used like any therapeutic language of like when you I feel, and I recall that there was also like a bunch of like weird sing-song like puppet shows on YouTube, which listeners, if you're interested in this, you should definitely check out because they're fucking bonkers. But like from the author of the original text, Nonviolent Communication, situation. But, and so, you know, that was like somewhat, it could, I feel like it can be used in such a patronizing way. And I love the idea of being able to kind of draw the pieces that feel relevant and important and valuable and kind of discard the parts that might not work in every community and every situation for every group of people. And I feel like that there are also a lot of parallels between what you've done there and also kind of what often comes up on the show in terms of 12-step modalities is that, like, you know, this, and I love Alcoholics Anonymous. It's like, it's such a beautiful part of my life. And more, the longer I stay sober, the more I realize, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners would agree, especially those who aren't, you know, cis white dudes, that there's a lot to be, you know, like that by the nature of who this work was written by and when it was written, it is based foundationally in a dominator culture of white supremacist capitalist patriarchy. And like, I do wonder kind of how you went about interrogating and evolving work in a meaningful way that you felt like it would be more available for more people who really needed it, you know?
Yeah. I guess so, rewinding back a little bit more, I am a 12-stepper. I love, like...
Okay. I knew it! Just kidding. I didn't know.
I know you did. Yeah, I am someone who has historically been drawn to addicts of a particular nature. And so I'm part of a partner group and really saved my life.
We love partner groups. Fantastic.
And so I think the first part that I can answer of how did I reshape NBC to feel more appropriate or a better fit, I think for me, I'm like one of those weirdos who were sort of always connected to my body. Like I think also it has something to do with my sensory profile. So I'm also licensed as an occupational therapist. So I have some information about like how my body works sensory wise. I've always been someone who's been like more, 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 give me more. So I, you know, touching things, feeling things, whatever. And so it has historically, I think, been easy for me to sense emotions in my, or like to it's been easy for me to experience body sensations. And then I've just used the body sensations to kind of like tell me what to do. And when a modality like doesn't feel right for my body, like, no, something is wrong with this. This is not it. And so I think specifically with nonviolent communication, that's one of the big pieces that was missing, is like connection to the body and listening to the body and how does the body communicate. And also the piece that was missing was how trauma dissociates us and separates us from our bodies and makes it hard to know what's happening. And then if we can't hear what our bodies are saying, there's actually like less space to make informed choices about what we want to do. And I think I might have lost track of the original. The original question was something, will you remind me what the question was?
I mean, it doesn't really matter. Like, I think that you're on an interesting tip. And the original question was like, how do you go about like interrogating or evolving something that you find that you love and you feel useful, so it's actually more useful to more people. But like, however you want to kind of get there, it doesn't really, like, the question itself doesn't really matter. I'm really curious about your experience, because I do think especially like the embodiment part is something that the 12 steps really lack, because they weren't like, it's like the 1930s and there are a bunch of like stockbrokers and proctologists who are like, we have to stop drinking because it's killing us. Where's Jesus? Essentially. you know, they were doing their best. And I love that. But, you know, I do, especially when you talk about like, you know, embodiment and using that as like a compass and a tool. And like I've been sober since 2006. And that's like something that's kind of come online in the last like 5 years, maybe, you know. So it's not, it's like, clearly it's not kind of a tool that we practice in that space. And I wonder, and taking people through the steps, I see how, what a shame it is, you know, to not include that, because it's so important, especially I think for, you know, the people I sponsor, which are traditionally like femmes and non-binary people, you know, who aren't necessarily included in the initial demographic.
I think what feels, yesterday I was at a Juneteenth event, and for folks who are outside of the United States, Juneteenth was the day that like, slavery had already been abolished, but it was like the last day that like information actually got to Black folks in Texas. I think, I actually don't know where, but I think it was like in Houston or Galveston. I don't know. I'm making stuff up. But that they were actually free. So it, is a day of both mourning and celebration. And so I was at this panel event with like Black creators, Black leaders talking about what's needed and wanted in the community. And the thing that kind of like struck me and occurred to me is that that's what's needed, is like people who are in leadership to create the spaces that are wanted or to create the spaces that are missing, right? I think that in like when I, one of the reasons that I never pursued like NBC certification, like via the like powers that be, is that I'm not interested in infiltrating that system and changing that system. I'm really happy just to create the thing that is for me. And then the people who are for this type of work in this type of world or nature or whatever will come to that work. I think it's incredibly hard, right? Like if you wanted, for example, to like totally change from the inside, 12-step, I think it's so hard to do that,
and dangerous, I think also,
the it's like retribution, the retaliation, the exhaustion, etc. The exhaustion is so hard, but I think that there's, at least for me and from what I've seen, and we're always within systems, so it's not like we're outside of systems or something like that, but when the expectation is simply, I'm going to create the thing that wants to be in the world versus I'm going to change the thing that is rooted in so much misogyny, horrible other things, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's harder. And it's, I think, a different, it's a different way for people, for us to focus our energy, I think.
No, I think that that rings really true. And I also don't, I don't necessarily think that like the basic form needs to be changed, you know, like, and in its traditions and its principles, it resists change very deeply. But to allow, as you kind of said, like a container for the stuff that might be necessary now that the world is a different place than it was, and that addicts who are seeking recovery have different needs, you know, that's like, it's a beautiful thing. And I think it's so wise of you to be like, that this is actually a nonviolent path, you know, like it is a path of least resistance to kind of created separate container.
Yeah, and I think it might be also useful for me to offer what my definition of nonviolence is, because for me, my definition of nonviolence is not necessarily being nice. It's not even necessarily creating no impact, right? Because we create impact with literally everything that we do. I kill fruit flies all day, every day, because... But for me, nonviolence is about being our authentic self and speaking as truthfully as we can, which then requires a knowing of ourselves and also requires these like nuances of like, the more I know myself, the less I trust what I say, or the less I want to say what I used to say. You know, things can change all the time. But yeah, like this idea of creating a nonviolent path is for me the idea of creating an authentic path. And that feels really fun and really important.
I really love that you say that. And I do think it's like, I think that there's a lot of fear within recovery communities of whatever kind that like ceasing to fight anything or anyone, AKA kind of choosing a nonviolent path, is going to like mean that you just like lay prone on the ground waiting to be like run over by a train or something. When in reality, it's like, it doesn't mean that I don't stand up in an authentic way and kind of practice with authenticity, like the beliefs that I feel are integral to my being and to how I want to, the world I want to live in, you know. It just means that I'm not actively combating things that I cannot change. And it's kind of, it's, I like that you talk about the joy inherent in living authentically. Like what happens, you know, like what happens after kind of making, like choosing this fork of the forks in the road. That's, and I'm, we have a follow-up question around there, but I'll get to it eventually. So I wonder, we were going to talk about eventually, I assume, the ancestral constellation work, because that seems like another perhaps linked, perhaps not bridge. And I'm curious as to like how you found that and like what that work is like for you and what, how, yeah, how it functions. Cause I think it's like, this is a bit more mystical maybe.
It's yeah, super mystical, super magical. So I found family constellation work also through NVC. So Jayanthiyakka had asked me to come and assist at a training. And one of the other teachers at that particular training, Sarah Payton, who's been my primary primary constellation teacher and whom I love very deeply, and who does a lot of addiction specific work, uses constellation work as one of her modalities, which is where I learned about it. So constellation work is a somatic modality, so it has to do with the body. And it's the idea that if something is stuck, feels stuck in our own life, or something keeps looping, or there's like a trauma that we can't, like somehow or another keeps reenacting in our life, we can't get out of that cycle, there's a very high likelihood that there's something intergenerational, something epigenetic that has been passed down that we're not explicitly conscious of. And if we can bring some attention or some awareness to whatever that thing was that wasn't sufficiently held, acknowledged, witnessed, we can release it from our nervous system. And then we can also be free of that trauma and we can live a life that's more deeply ours and, you know, of our choosing. And I love it for me, it dovetails perfectly into like NBC work, because intellectually we all know that hurt people, but it for sure doesn't actually take it out of our nervous system. Like I can theoretically know that my parents were doing the best that they could. I still feel like shit inside. Constellation work, the first time I did it was just like mind blowing in terms of how it really creates. And I can't necessarily explain how the work works. I can try. But it creates a context for the body to understand that this really wasn't about me or really truly isn't about us. And in the different I'm going to put a pin to come back to the roots of constellation work, because that also has some stuff to be said. But certainly in the way that I facilitate, it allows people to actually feel how much their ancestors really want them to win and how much your ancestors don't want you to heal their baggage and don't want you to hold their shit. That we are allowed to put things down that don't belong to us, and that doing that is actually the greatest act of love that we can offer to the lineage.
That's so, like, I felt really emotional when you were saying that. That's really interesting. And it's cool too, because my aunt does some of this stuff. And so I was really curious to kind of hear about your experience with it and how you facilitate, because I do think that, like, you know, I think it's very easy to write off what we don't understand, obviously, because it's like, again, there is this kind of mystical element that is really inexplicable, that it's so functional. But I will say, like, on the as somebody who is not even in the room, not involved in the actual practice, that like I feel like I've had some like benefits of my people in my lineage doing the work, which is really crazy. Like, remember she was telling, like, we don't have a particularly close relationship. Hi, Pammy, if you're listening. I have had struggles with food and body stuff and disordered eating and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, addiction is a family disease, which is also I wanted to talk to you about it in this context. But she had mentioned, like, a specific timeline where she had kind of done some ancestral constellation work on stuff that had kind of haunted our family, essentially. And it was always the youngest daughter. And so that's me, that's my mother, that's my cousin, that's her, my grandmother, and she, and who essentially died of obesity or related functions, you know? And so she had told me about doing this work around a specific date. She's like, this was when we were doing that. And that actually perfectly aligned with like a massive kind of breakthrough I had had with realizing that, like, in fact, in conjunction with 12-step work, that like my higher power doesn't have a problem with my body. That the reason I'm suffering is because I do, you know, and that it's not like there's nothing to do to there's nothing to change, you know. And this was like a hyper revelation at the time. And so I don't know, it's like, it feels wild to say from somebody, as somebody who is not even involved in that practice, that like, I mean, and it could be coincidental, but you know, it's like, is it odd or is it God, whatever.
I never heard that before. I really like it.
It's very useful. but just to kind of say that, like, I can't explain that, you know, and for me, a lot of the kind of spiritual, like what I occasionally refer to as like hippie voodoo bullshit, like if it's practical and if it works, like who am I to say it's not real, you know? And like, even if it isn't quote unquote real, like if it's working, then like, who cares? Yeah. Right. So I wonder how kind of I'm curious as to how that kind of weaves into the nonviolent DNVC stuff.
Yeah.
And then also how what your practice looks like, because what your facilitation, I guess, looks like.
Okay. So the way we're sort of, whenever we're reacting to each other, we're reacting to each other's trauma, each other's bullshit, right? And we're reacting to whatever that sparks within us. Like, what does your shit activate of my shit?
Yeah. Historically. And that could be like generations.
Yes. Of- right. And the more aware I am of my shit, and B, the less reactive I am to your shit, right? The less I like, I don't know, feel negatively impacted by whatever it is that you're navigating or going through, the more open-hearted and responsive I can actually be in ways that are appropriate or aligned or within capacity for me. So the constellation work kind of has like a dual component of like, it clears out our gunk because we're carrying all this baggage that we didn't even realize that we were carrying. It clears that gunk out. So that when we're in conversations with each other, I can just show up differently. I can have a lot more space because I'm not reacting to a whole bunch of like under the surface stuff for me that's being repressed, that has been repressed for however many generations and then is like blocked up within me. And what I have found is kind of like it makes me capable to just be responsive to what is true or what is it that I actually want to respond to without getting caught up in the trauma tangle all over again.
And I'm sure like with knowledge of how I take my stuff personally and like the release of that, I can actually offer the same grace to other people, which is very exciting.
Yeah. And I think the thing I'll say also, like looping back to the addiction stuff, right? Like addiction is a trauma. It's so traumatic, right?
It's yeah, for everybody so, also. I mean,
yeah. And I think particularly for children, even though like we can be grown now, like that little kid, that 3-year-old, that 5-year-old, that 2-month-old who was getting neglected or not held with sufficient care, you know, while their caregivers were like drowning in whatever it is that they were drowning in, that sense of like pain, loss, neglect, loneliness can be so intense even when we're 30, 40, 50, 60. And from what I have sort of seen and experienced, the gift of constellation work is like really being able to identify how am I storing that little one in my body? And then how can I let that little one receive the love that is actually present for her, for them. Yeah.
That's so powerful. I mean, especially because I also think that there's, you know, we talk about kind of active addiction being a trauma, but I also think like untreated alcoholism in sobriety is a fucking nightmare to live with. Like, you know, this idea of somebody who's not kind of able to be present because like their suffering is really great, which is my experience of like being a dry drunk or interacting with dry drunks is gnarly, you know, and that can come off as like rageaholism or any other kind of like scary non-substance based addiction, right? Whew. It's so cool. I mean, it's interesting this week we're kind of like there due to a bunch of kind of schedule cancellations and rearrangements, like I'm recording three podcasts, one a day. And yesterday we talked to a guy named Michael Marcus, who wrote a book of a memoir, and so much of the kind of discussions of like, and he's now sober, and a lot of his talks about like trauma and healing are very, very closely linked to this conversation and kind of like what happens when we do the work of forgiving and being able to show up for ourselves and be present and kind of release the narrative of like, release the ownership of a narrative of like doom and gloom and trauma and pain, you know, being the kind of like north on the compass, you know, because I think that if that's the story, it's very difficult to see anything else or to experience anything else, mm-hmm. you know, and there's so many different ways to kind of see the either trauma or baggage or narrative or kind of epigenetics, as you said, that it's really, it's so exciting that you're doing this work and talking about it, because I feel like it can be so helpful to, I'm sure, a lot of communities, but especially like our listenership.
Okay, two things. One, there's a fruit fly.
I think your authentic self wants to kill it.
Okay, two, I'm wondering if we can do a kind of pivot. There's been a little, like, there are certain words that I don't use, and I don't use them actually, or I'm really tender with how I use them because of the, like, traumatic impact they can have. And you have used some of them, and I haven't known how to, like, interrupt or interject or speak in a way that actually feels true for me, but I'm kind of finding it because I'm like here now.
No, that's so exciting. I love learning in the moment. Let's go.
And I think also because part of my brain has been, one of the things I've really been exploring also is just the pieces of like letting everybody be on their own journey, and also like what are the best ways to sort of like come in or come out of those things. So I think for me, words that I don't use, I don't ever use the word obesity. I don't know enough about, as I've already demonstrated, I'm not like a history, I'm not good at like historical things. But one of the things I do know is that obesity is like manufactured by the medical industrial complex. And like that word triggers so much trauma for fat folks or for folks whose bodies have been like ignored and overlooked, like get blamed for that. You know, I think that word, and I also don't tend, I'm really careful with how I use the word manic. I don't know, you know, like both the word manic and crazy, I probably don't use, I don't know. The truth is there are lots of words that I use when I'm in like private company and people who I know understand me. What I'm tracking, I think, is I actually don't know who all of your audience is. I don't know who of my audience is listening and how they'll be impacted. And also it's our first time meeting each other. So even though there's lots of ways where I can imagine that we're values aligned, I don't actually know that yet. And so it feels good to name that. I think the use of those words in this space in this way, like, triggered something for me or brought something up.
Well, I really appreciate you naming that. And I hear you, and I apologize to anybody who might have been affected or negatively triggered by my use of the word obesity, and like definitely on a journey with that. So thank you for your patience. I totally agree. And like, I'm definitely kind of in a process of overcoming and waking up from, you know, like existing within diet culture for a really long time. And, you know, it's a trip. Yeah. So I apologize for anybody who might have been negatively affected by my use of that word. And that's interesting what you say about manic. Like I've been diagnosed hypermanic. Mm. So I mean, as a medical condition, I do wonder if there's like a better, I do wonder if there's a better name for what that, that feeling is, because for me, when I start to kind of like do like a fast, like when I say fast, I mean like speedy disassociation. I don't have a better language for it, you know, and I wonder if there is one, because that's really how I feel in certain places and with certain kind of, I mean, obviously like as a stimulant addict, no shit, but, I do wonder if there's a better word that's kind of less, less potentially loaded, you know?
It sounds like for you, it's a perfectly appropriate word because that is accurate. And it's also true that that's a word that gets tossed around. Like, it's like when people who aren't bipolar say that they're being bipolar, it's like, stop saying that. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it sounds like it is a true thing for you and a true experience. And so I'm glad I know that now.
Yeah. And I mean, I think, but again, I really appreciate kind of the opportunity to learn more about each other and also to, you know, make this show more accessible and not kind of be flinging things around in an ignorant way, because again, words have impact, right? But I do, I think that the way that you kind of circled back, and I see you in our conversation kind of pausing and feeling things in your body, and it's a really powerful way to engage, because I can see you kind of considering and feeling in the moment. And like, as somebody who's a little prone to kind of verbal diarrhea, that's a really, it's very inspiring, because it does make me want to kind of like lean in and hear what you're kind of feeling and reflecting on. Right. So I appreciate the way that you did that, in fact, and the fact that you did that.
So cool. Thank you.
So cool. are you comfortable?
Yeah. Yeah.
Reapproaching the
yeah.
Awesome. and are you comfortable to reapproach the kind of the like question of about the kind of, I guess we've covered the theory, but I'm curious about the practice of ancestral constellation, because I feel it can be very like, I know how members of my family have been engaged with it, but I wonder if that's consistent with your practice, and I wonder if there's like different ways to do it, or if every session is totally different.
Yeah. There's a million different ways to do it. It's one of the things that I love about the modality. And also, you know, for me, so the roots of constellation work, as I have sort of been taught and learned, was really developed by a person named Bert Hellinger. And there were other people who were developing it at the same time, but my teachers have come from like the study of Bert Hellinger. And he lived in South Africa for 16 years. And was fully immersed within the Zulu community and like learned a lot of their magic and tools. And like when he came back, developed constellation work. And like, I think what I read on Wikipedia was that it developed out of both what he had learned in South Africa and also like other therapeutic modalities that were developing in Germany at the time. And from my understanding, it wasn't like a direct theft in the sense of like, what family constellation work looks like now is nothing what like is practiced within the Zulu community, but the piece that was stolen, not acknowledged, et cetera, is that our ancestors are all around us, that our ancestors are all around us and that they influence and inform the shape and texture of how we live and breathe. And for me, I was also raised in like a household where that was like a belief for me growing up, that I had an understanding that like, yes, the ancestors are everywhere. They're a part of everything. The future is everywhere. The future is a part of everything. And so where am I going with all of this? Different constellation practitioners will do things very, very differently depending upon sort of like what their lens is. But the work is magic because it really does tap into this thing of like, we are part of each other and like there's a source energy behind us. I don't know how or, you know, and it doesn't excuse like all the fucking shit, but like somehow there's meaning and purpose to be found. So one of the things I have really loved is that as I've learned the tools and the modality, I've really been able to fuck it up and bring it up and like do things in ways that are like wild and different. Cause it's like, it is inherently a queer modality, meaning it can go in so many different directions, right? It's inherently like an indigenous modality, like with roots in Black indigenous technology, which means it is expansive and it can dream and it can breathe. So functionally speaking, when I facilitate, I usually do either one-on-one work or group work. And when I'm doing one-on-one work, it's me and the client, and then they have objects that I'll have them use to channel information. And basically, like, I'll ask a question, like, what do you want to receive from this session? What is it that you want to explore? And then based on what they say, let's say they say, I don't know, I'd like to be able to breathe easier when I'm around alcohol. Like, I don't want to have to feel so overwhelmed every time I come into a space and there's like a bottle of wine present. I'd like to be able to breathe and, you know, stay within my chosen behaviors or whatever. So then we'll start bringing representative in. So we'll use objects and through like conversation and facilitate, you know, stuff like that, I'll ask questions about like, where is this, what is the specific trauma that is making it difficult for that person to be in that place where they want to be, however they want to be. Mm-hmm. And this is the piece that defies explanation. Information will come through the objects. When the client touches an object, their body sensations will change. When I facilitate in group, people will enter the constellation and people will themselves report what their body sensations are. And I, as a facilitator, tend to work strictly with body sensations because it is the it's the surest way to ensure that we're not projecting stuff, mm-hmm. right? And we're always letting the client make meaning out of the information that comes up. But body sensations will emerge and so frequently, like, clients will have just like, it's like their minds are blown of like, how did that information come forward? And yo, I don't fucking know, but it just does. It's so good. And through the information, my belief is that when we say yes to being part of the modality, our nervous system is saying yes to being open, to being seen, and once the information comes in, it's real easy to just be like, oh, this is the shit we got to clear out. I don't know if that really answered a question because it answered some pieces, yeah. Not all maybe.
I mean, I feel like it's probably impossible to answer all just because there is like anything of a, I liked how you used the word technology, like anything of a kind of spiritual technologies can be very difficult to pin down and like, thank goodness, because otherwise capitalism would ruin them. But I do appreciate kind of the, the link between like the kind of somatic and the traumatic and how you can kind of link and release those things. And I do wonder like how, I mean, and to anybody listening who's like curious about this stuff, like go find a facilitator near you or perhaps check out Minachi's work, because it sounds like it's like, don't do this by yourself.
Yeah.
But for those of us who might have had kind of a strong history of like disassociation or trouble accessing somatic messaging, right? Or just like, if you've trained your bodies for years that it's going to be ignored no matter what it does, I think it's very difficult to kind of access that stuff. So I wonder like, how do you handle a catch-22 that I think a lot of addicts or especially like people who might have had food and body issues where you want to get access to healing, but also you have trouble feeling feelings in your body.
Yeah. I don't know how, but the work works. What I have found as what's important is not necessarily you don't have to be versed in feeling things in your body for information to come forward, whether it's in a one-to-one session or, you know, in a group session. What I have found is the hinge, like the pivoting point is whether someone is willing to let information come forward. And even that, I don't know how to explain it, but like, you know, there's a tipping point with all healing modalities where like on the one side, you're like uncertain if the work is going to work. And like what I have found is like, if that skepticism is too high, the work doesn't work. But if there's just enough of just like, I really want it. I would really like this. Somehow or other, I have found if that is the anchor, the work comes forward and it opens up. Yeah, it really does.
That's so beautiful. I mean, and also like, I assume that by the time people get to you and are willing to kind of access your services, like, hopefully they're not just doing it because they're skeptics, you know, like that ideally, like at least they're curious kind of about this is a path towards healing, right?
Yeah. I think most of it, I mean,
an asshole otherwise. Like, who hurt you?
Yeah.
and I mean, and now we kind of circle back to the joy question, right? That you talked about DNBC is kind of like, by accessing the authentic self, you create a path for joy, right? That this like opens it up. And I wonder kind of, I'm sure a lot of the ancestral constellation work can be incredibly heavy just because like you're dealing with, you know, pretty intense trauma. I'm assuming if people are, again, like if the stakes are high enough, like everybody has some shit, but like if the stakes are high enough that you're going to call in a professional, like chances are it's not that much like light and fun. Right. But I wonder kind of like, can you talk about A, how you kind of keep yourself grounded and well nourished as a facilitator? And then also like talk about the joyful part.
Oh yeah. It's funny. Yeah, the work is deep and it does get like gunky. But I had a teacher once who reminded me there's different things that we're all skilled to hold. And so one of the things I love about this type of deep trauma work is actually the quality. Like, it's really lovely to see someone who didn't believe that their ancestors wanted them to win. And then through the course of the work, because one of the things that happens with constellation work is you can often get experience types of accountability that wouldn't be possible in real life. So things like representatives who have caused harm and like really deep harm, like different forms of gender-based violence, sexual abuse, the neglect, et cetera, that can come with active addiction. When those representatives apologize and say, I'm so sorry. And when the client also gets to see, I see the context that you were operating from, and I will receive that apology. It's really, really beautiful. And ultimately, like, seeing a client walk away, like, feeling less burdened by their past and feeling just a sense of, like, lightness and that piece of like really watching a client being able to take a much fuller breath is a real gift for me as a practitioner. So I think one, the work itself can be really nourishing. And then I do my things, whether it's like my reality TV, I'm like a member of Bachelor Nation, right? Or making sure that like I'm seeing practitioners, like I have healing practitioners that I go to and my tarot card reader, or just going on walks, whatever it is. After this, I'm going to go get a coffee from my favorite coffee shop. They have a Habibi latte, which is just the most delicious thing I've ever had. So then I keep an eye, or I do my best to keep an eye on those things so that I can also be replenished.
Awesome. And knowing, I think actually, this is a beautiful pivot into the next question, if I do say so myself. like your email is delight. Which I think, and recently that's come up a lot as a kind of spiritual practice. And I wonder, what is your experience of, like, it sounds like delight is very much linked to your kind of self-care practice in order to nourish yourself to do this challenging work. But also, like, because so much of your work is very somatic, I wonder, what are you delighting in today and how does it feel in your body?
One, I think I just like the word delight. Like, there's something, right, the I and the T. I think I just really, really like the word.
That's very clear, actually. Delight. It's a good one. Yeah, it feels good in the mouth. Say it with a delight.
Delight. Yeah. Okay. Let me take a moment and tap in. What am I delighting in today? Okay. They're really simple things. I'm delighting in the fact that I have this full water jug and my intention is to drink it all. I have some anticipatory delight about the poops I'm going to have. I love.
Yes.
My favorite thing. So I'm really just like anticipatory delight about the way hydration is going to lubricate my intestines. And then I have like some good things lined up. I'm teaching like one of my favorite classes today. So I'll do that. And then this latte that's waiting for me and a big old walk.
Oh, fantastic. And I wonder kind of like, we're going to pivot into the lightning round, which is mostly okay. More talking about delight, but in various forms. But I do wonder, like, what's next for you? Is there anything that you want to plug? Is there anything that, if people are interested in what your work is, like, where they can find you or what a good entry point would be if people want to, like, know more about you and what you're up to?
Yeah. So my website is meenachi.com. If you want, like, a gentle entry point, like, you just want to sneak peep and creep in, you know, a bunch of, like, self-paced things where you can just, like, watch, listen, get a sense of my voice, like, and specific things with like DNVC and constellation work, you know, like things around like, how do I discern trauma from intuition, or how do I heal my relationship with money, or how do I embrace my queerness, right? So there's a bunch of like self-paced things on my website that you can dig in.
I can't believe we didn't get into any of on this fucking show. We'll have to do that.
And then the other way.
I mean, that's like dumb. I looked at your website and it was like, all of this looks amazing. And then I was like, I'm going to talk about the thing.
Anyway. Yes. And for folks who are hungry for a deeper dive, then you can contact me again through my website and we can explore working together one-to-one.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for that. Mm-hmm. And we're going to just kind of throw out some lighthearted, okay, exciting questions to hopefully kind of bring up some delight and make you feel good and make people listening feel good. So what is your favorite snack?
Ooh. I'm doing the 75 hard challenge right now, so I can't have my favorite snack, which is chips. But chips.
Wait, what's the challenge you're doing?
The 75 hard challenge. It's like a whole thing. It's terrible. It's wonderful. I needed some discipline. But yes, chips are my favorite snack.
Any specific flavor kind?
I think brand? I really used to like the truffle chips from Trader Joe's, but Trader Joe's will sometimes change their recipe and not tell you, and they change. Mm. They're not as truffly anymore, but I hold a soft spot in my heart for the old truffle chips from Trader Joe's.
If only they didn't expire, you could find them on eBay. What is your favorite way to play?
Ooh, laughter.
I like that. What turns you on? And that can be like sexually, or it can be intellectually, creatively, physically, kind of like what charges you up?
My first thought went to sexual, and I thought really, really light touch, like really tantalizing, just scraping a fingernail over somebody's skin really turns me on, especially if it's in like an ignored spot, like an elbow or like the knuckle on your toe. I guess we have.
So like secret spots. That's cool. That's, I feel like that's like not paid enough attention to. I like that. I don't think we've ever heard that here. So what is the best thing you bought, read, heard, watched, consumed recently?
Ooh.
Any of those things.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It's two things, tie for tie. One, The Queer Ultimatum, and two, Couples Therapy on Showtime.
Fantastic. Yeah. Okay. I've been meaning, like, in France, it's very difficult to get American shows. A British actor, who is how I found your work, suggested the Magic Mike reality show. And so I've been, like, VPNing this shit. So now it's time. And now I have new things to check out. Yes. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And finally, what do you love?
Oh, you know, the first thing that came into my mouth, and I was like, is that true? I love me. That's really, that's so nice. We're always working on our self-love. So for this moment, me.
That is so fantastic. Thank you so much for sharing that with us, me. and once again, where can people find you if they want to get in touch or check out your work?
Yeah, so my website is my name, meenachi.com, and then I'm on Instagram at with.meenachi.
Beautiful. Well, thank you so, so much. I would love to have you back if you're ever down to talk
about
would love to. All of the exciting workshops that you're doing.
For sure.
Try and be less sweaty. Well, enjoy your latte. Have a wonderful day. It's really, really nice to get to eBeach.
It was nice. Creativity, authenticity, body autonomy, mental health, sexuality, gender identity, recovery, got a spiritual growth. Sober, sex, all of this and more. Sober, sex, you'll never get bored. Sober, sex, all of this and more. Sober, sex, we're never ever bored. Creativity, authenticity, body autonomy, mental health, sexuality, gender identity, recovery, got it.